Hey there, this is Scott Weingart, and this is the MCRT podcast, but this is not an MCRT podcast. This will fit into the third category of the audio you might hear on MCRT. We have the podcasts, which are ED critical care. We're going to have occasional lectures, and then we have this, and this is a rant. So if you're expecting an emergency department critical care topic, stop listening now. These rants will be occasional. They'll be hopefully less than 10 minutes. They'll be on emergency medicine, but they'll be tangential to ED critical care. And I'd love to hear your feedback. What I want to talk about today is risk. Chris Nixon, who goes by the Twitter name Precordial Thump, sent out a tweet on a lecture done by Dave Schreiger out in California. And that lecture was on risk in emergency medicine. And it was one of the best lectures I've heard in a long time. You can listen to it for free if you go to allaconference.com. And I'll put the link in the show notes as well. That's allaconference.com, and the lecture is by David Schreiger. And this lecture brought me back to an area of particular interest for me, which is critical thinking in emergency medicine. At the beginning of my career, I was actually very caught up in this topic. In fact, I wrote a book about it. My mom read it. She said it was very good. I think she might have been the only one. I dedicated the book to my fiance. I'm not even sure if she read it. Now, being a fragile ego, I attribute this to little interest in emergency medicine for this topic, and not just really poor writing on my part. And I stopped talking about critical thinking, and I started talking about ED critical care exclusively, and people's reception to that latter topic was much greater. But David Schreiger managed to make a topic on ED thinking incredibly interesting, and it just stirred up all those emotions and thoughts back in me. Now, I suggest you listen to David Schreiger's lecture first and then come back to this rant. It'll make more sense. But you could listen to it even without listening to the lecture if you're already here. Dr. Schreiger talked about risk and our misperceptions of it, our lack of acknowledgement of risk as probably one of the most important topics in emergency medicine. And I just want to elaborate on three things that occurred to me while I was listening to that lecture. Now, the first thing is that Dr. Schreiger was talking about the fact that emergency medicine is not really taking care of sick patients for the most part anymore. It's more taking care of patients who come to us with non-emergent complaints 90% of the time, and maybe 10% of the time you're taking care of sick patients. And you've all observed that. I have a big problem with that. But I'll tell you, my problem with that is not taking care of these really not too ill patients. I don't mind that so much. My problem is the fact that the patient comes to the emergency department should be a powerful indicator that something is wrong with them. That's how it's supposed to be. If a patient comes to the emergency department with a headache, it should be because this headache is so bad they can't conceive of it being anything but a serious life threat. But that's not the case, as you know. People come to the emergency department all the time with complaints that they don't even feel are life-threatening, that they know in their heart of hearts is not a serious complaint. And they come to us because we're open 24 hours a day. They come to us because we're easy to access, because we don't require insurance. And I say that's all fine, except now I lose one of the most fundamental and important diagnostic points in their management, which is whether or not they truly believe they are sick. Yeah, sure, you could ask them. You could try to reason and explain that either way you're going to take care of them, but you just really need to know if this headache really is dramatically different than the ones they've had in the past. But I find almost inevitably they lie to me. Not necessarily because they're bad people, but because they feel I won't take care of them, or I won't give them as much pain medication, or because they just don't want to admit that they came to the emergency department with a non-emergent complaint. And as a result, when you get this patient and they tell you this headache is much worse than the ones they've had in the past, it's different in character, you're obliged to do the CT scan and LP. if they told me up front, I've had this headache 1,000 times, I just didn't feel like paying for the Tylenol bottle, I would be ever so happy to take care of that patient. Here, have a Tylenol, go home. It doesn't bother me. What bothers me is I don't know if they're sick or not. And you could pretend that you could become good enough to discern that despite what the patient's telling you. But in most of the complaints that give me trouble, it's just not true. Chest pain, headache, abdominal pain. All of these are complaints where the patient's perceptions of whether this is different from what they've had in the past is such an important piece of information. And that information is lost. What I'd like to do is break the emergency department into two and call one half the 24-hour clinic and the other half the life-threatening illness department. And when the patients come, ask them which one they want to go to. Tell them they'll get taken care of just as quickly whichever way they go. If they want to go to the 24-hour clinic, we'll still take care of them. But now we know they don't feel they're that sick. They're coming for access issues, for money issues. All right, enough on that. Point two is we really have ourselves to blame for most of the problems we have with risk, because our own experts in the field are saying things that make it impossible to deal with risk. Let's use, for example, chest pain. Now, you show me a 50-year-old with a normal EKG and no glaring risk factors who looks good. They look okay. That patient doesn't need to be admitted for chest pain. You know it. I know it. The patient knows it. And yet, every so often, some of those patients will come back with acute coronary syndrome, and even a smaller number of them will come back dying or dead. And as a result, we predicate our treatment on that worst-case scenario. Dr. Schreiger goes into this in detail wonderfully. But what he didn't mention is that all of the chest pain experts in emergency medicine are telling you there is no ironclad way short of provocative testing to send that patient home safely. They'll all quote you that every study has a 2%, 3% miss rate, and they'll say, that's too high. And as a result, we should admit everyone. These are our experts. These aren't the cardiologists. And I say, that's ridiculous. They should look at that 2% and say, you should send those patients home anyway. That's what we should be told by our experts. That's what we should be told by ASEP, is it's okay to miss 2 out of every 100 chest pain players. Now, are we really going to miss 2 out of every 100? No. I mean, I don't know how these studies find this, because if I sent home 100 of the patients I just spoke about, I don't think I'd be missing 2%. And when I do admit these patients, I don't think 2% of them are ruling in. But let's make it worst case scenario. Let's say 2% are missed acute coronary syndromes. Why aren't we saying that's okay? It should be okay. The reason we're missing 2% is not because we want 2 out of every 100 patients to have a bad outcome. It's that the amount of testing to get down to zero is a waste. It causes more harm than good. It wastes money. We shouldn't be doing it. But no one's saying that. In fact, Jeff Klein, when he was developing his PERC rule, said 2% is an acceptable miss rate for pulmonary embolism. And if PERC gets you below 2%, that's okay. You should send those patients home. And people came out against that concept. We're doing this to ourselves. If we want to start dealing with risk properly, the first step is for every person speaking at major conferences to say, every disease has an acceptable miss rate. We might not know precisely what it is, but for the life threats, it's always somewhere around 1% to 2%. And missing those patients is not only acceptable, but demanded by a good healthcare system. All right, the last point. Dr. Schreiger made a point that we should be explicit on the type of risk we're talking about when we're thinking about a patient. Are we trying to avoid risk to ourselves, the practitioners, or are we sparing our patients from risk? I want to go one step further and say there should be no risk for us, that we should not be at risk. We should not be working a job where we're at risk. Imagine telling the lawyers that if they lose a case, they are guilty of malpractice. That every case that they try in court needs to be a win or that was their failure, that they would be putting their job, their finances, and their family at risk for every case they lost. And that's preposterous. And yet that is the situation we're in. We shouldn't have to figure out if it's the patient's risk or ours, because there should be no risk for us. As long as we're doing the right thing, as long as we're not coming to work drunk, as long as we're not grossly incompetent, there should be no risk. Even if we made a mistake, there should be no risk. Now, how do we realistically make that happen? I'm cynical enough to believe that real tort reform is never going to happen in this country. And to my international listeners, I wish I had your healthcare systems. But I have an idea of how we can make tort reform happen in a way that's realistic, in a way that can be done in a very short period of time. And it's just so simple. Here it is. And remember, we said on MCRT first, if you work in a hospital, you cannot be sued for malpractice. The hospital can. The lawyers could still sue the hospital for anything they're suing the individual physicians for now. But the hospital's malpractice is paying the damages. And it goes on the hospital's record, not the individual physician's. There you go. Problem solved. Of course, if you come to work drunk or you're grossly negligent or you willfully cause damage to the patient, yeah, sue the individual physician. But otherwise, hospital only. Now, what does this do? Well, if we believe what the trial attorneys say, that one of the prime reasons for malpractice is to correct bad physician behavior, guess what? If your hospital gets sued, they'll make you feel it if they think you were wrong. That correction will still be done, but it will be done, hopefully, by a group that's more informed of the issues involved. You'll still hear about it, but hopefully by physicians, not by a jury informed by only paid expert witnesses. So the hospital gets sued. The ramifications come from the hospital if you did something wrong, but no ramifications against your personal record or your personal finances. No glaring strike against you every time you apply for a new job. Now imagine that. Imagine you couldn't be individually sued. How many more patients that you actually thought were well would you start sending home? I know for me, there'd be a whole bunch. All right, I'm going to stop there. I'd love to hear your comments about this stuff. If these rants are annoying to you, tell me that too, and we'll put them on a separate podcast so you don't have to be bothered. All right, that's all for today. Bye-bye.